Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he would.
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope. Speaking of the quality and power of love, on this new day, fresh and clean and unused, moldable to your touch, reminds me strongly of an old fable. The sun and the wind agreed to hold a contest to determine which was stronger. One day when the wind was roaring and bragging about his strength, the sun challenged him in the fable. The sun said, "I see a way to decide our dispute. The one who can make that traveler take off his heavy cloak shall be the stronger." The wind agreed and said he'd try first. And the wind whirled and swirled about the traveler, almost whipping the coat to rags. But the harder the wind blew, the colder grew the atmosphere. The traveler wrapped his coat about him tighter than ever before. Finally, the wind gave up, admitted his failure, declared also the sun would fail. But the sun just smiled and let his rays fall gently on the traveler down below. Soon the traveler grew so warm he had to remove his coat to keep cool. Now love is like the sun. Its very existence and expression creates warmth. It doesn't have to whip at a man and roar and rant to be effective. The simple awareness of love is effective. Did you ever watch clouds disperse on a dark day when the sun suddenly began to shine through? the clouds seemed to completely dissolve, melt away. You yourself have that same power within you to dispel all your troubles today, all your perplexities, all your distresses. Stop talking, stop thinking about your problems all the time. Such action aggravates your troubles. Brighten your mind with the conscious happiness of love. Take the advice of a wise philosopher. Do something for somebody else quickly when you're depressed. Do something for somebody else quickly when you're depressed. Such an action will brighten and change your entire outlook in a flash. One of the most interesting facets of love is the simple fact that only in the welfare of our fellow man can we attend properly to our own welfare. When we work for our neighbor, in reality, we are working for ourselves. And we are working with God, who needs us to carry out His will and to help Him help others. When God's will has been fully carried out, we've reached the pinnacle of success, peace, even world peace. I'm often amazed at the complexities we humans assume must provide the victories we strive so hard, so clumsily to win. Somehow it seems only the poets have grasped the happy simplicity of real life satisfaction. The quality love, for example, is in its essence supremely simple. But poets, rather than the so-called great thinkers, are the ones who fully grasp the significance and the meaning of love. Consider the simplicity of these soaring lines. When your heart is in despair, add more love unto your prayer. Love will meet the need. When you find a rugged way, when you have a long, hard day, when for help you pray and pray, love will meet the need. When your heart is feeling fear, love will meet the need. Love will help in all you do. Love will help you to be true. Love will meet the need. God as love will banish hate, if on Him you only wait. Love will meet the need. All your needs will be supplied, if on love you have relied. Not a thing will be denied. Love will meet the need. Or listen to these stinging words, one of the most beautiful prayers that I know. Teach me to love. There was a time when in my daily prayer, I asked for the things I deemed most fair and necessary to my life's success. Riches, of course, and ease and happiness. A host of friends, a home without alloy, a primrose path of luxury and joy, social distinction, and enough of fame to leave behind a well-remembered name. Ambition ruled my life. I longed to do great things that all my little world might view and whisper, wonderful. Ah, patient God, how blind we are until thy shepherd's rod of tendering chastening gently leads us on to better things. Today, I have but one petition, Lord. Teach me to love. Indeed, it is my greatest, my only need. Teach me to love, not those who first love me, but all the world, with that rare purity, a broad, outreaching thought, which bears no trace of earthly taint, but holds in its embrace humanity, and only seems to see the good in all reflected, Lord, from Thee. And teach me, Father, how to love most, those who most stand in need of love, that host of people who are sick and poor and bad, whose tired faces show their lives are sad, who toil along the road with footsteps slow, and hearts more heavy than the world can know. People, when others pass discreetly by, they fail to hear the pleading of their cry for help amid the tumult of the crowd, whose very anguish makes them cold and proud, resentful, stubborn, bitter in their grief. I want to bring them comfort and relief, to put my hand in theirs, and at their side walk softly on a faithful, fearless guide. Help me to feel these sad ones doubly dear, because they need so much. Help me to seek and find that which they thought was lost, to speak such words of cheer that, as we pass along, the wilderness shall blossom into song. Ah, love divine, how empty was that prayer of other days, that which once was so fair. Those flimsy baubles that the world calls joys are nothing to me now but broken toys, outlived, outgrown. I thank thee that I know those much-desired dreams of long ago, like butterflies, have had their summer's day, of brief enchantment have gone. I pray for better things. Thou knowest God above, my one desire now, teach me to love. What could be simpler than the thoughts in these lines? A child can understand them. Yet so many of us neglect or somehow are unable to make use of their protection against happiness, unhappiness, sorrow, suffering, fear, envy, worry. We permit ourselves to be tangled in imagined complexities and thus lose sight of love's utter simplicity. Every human being needs and ardently wishes to love and to be loved. But say the many who get lost on the way, the people I know don't seem to want or need my love or appreciation or understanding. Some of them almost make a point of telling me they don't even want my friendship. Don't you believe it? Do the flowers need sunshine and rain? Of course. The people around you want and need your goodwill and affection just as much as the flowers need sunshine and rain. Maybe they've been fooling you. They may even have fooled themselves into the belief they can get along without your love or anybody else's love. Fear, a sense of insecurity, or lack of understanding can often make human beings act, and on the surface even feel, exactly opposite to their basic desires. But every person in the world wants love, whether consciously or unconsciously. Your own heart, with understanding and love, can cut through the negative, untruthful, and unconscious outer layer of somebody else's fear and timidity and misunderstanding. Reach in. Meet a fellow human being's deep, true wish for love and need and understanding and thirst for appreciation. We all want appreciation so very much. If you try sincerely to fill this need for love and understanding and appreciation, others will be forced out of their shells, no matter how thick or hard, into the warmth of human love. The underlying unity and harmony of life demands that we extend to others all the goodwill and kindness and generosity and love we hope to receive from them. To have a friendly attitude toward others is indispensable to our own successful living. Emerson's well-known phrase, "The only way to have a friend is to be one," was much more than virtuous sentiment. Love felt sincerely in your heart for all mankind will keep you stable and calm, serene, poised, in whatever circumstances you may find yourself. Love can heal your discord of mind, your body, or the day-to-day affairs of the world you live in. Envelop yourself in it. Immerse yourself so fully and so deeply that love radiates to all about you and reflects back to yourself. Remember these words. You cannot be critical and radiate love. You cannot be selfish and radiate love. You cannot be angry and radiate love. Try another experiment. Consider for a moment some individual from whom you feel no sentiment of love or affection. Then try to think how you would react if you should learn this person felt only love for you. The result of this little exercise alone may surprise you. Through the love you express, you can accomplish anything you desire, eliminate anything or any condition that might otherwise work against you. So, in one way or another, to define love is an admonition. Be the friend you want. Be courteous, be gentle, be kind. Above all, be understanding of yourself, of your own shortcomings, as well as those of others. If a friend understands you, it's obvious this understanding brings out the best within you. Remember, this works both ways. If you understand a friend, you bring out the best within his makeup. You may even help the friend find within himself forces and powers and love of which he's unaware. There's a poem called Friendship, written by Francis J. Gable, that always comes to my mind when I think about human beings trying to make friends. Says Gable, "I want the man I meet each day, wherever I may be, to know that joy and happiness just radiate from me. I want to put so much into the hand clasp I extend that every man I meet will say, I know he'll be a friend. I want to greet my fellow man with such a hearty smile that will banish all their care and make life seem worthwhile. I want to understand their need and such assistance lend that every man I know will feel, I'm glad he's my friend. I ask not honor nor reward for anything I do. I just would open wide my heart and let the love shine through. Though I but meet a brother once, one touch, one smile I'd send, and cause that man to sing for aye, I'm glad he's my friend." And so, friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
Listen again tomorrow, friends, for another message of hope with Richard Easton. This is UBC, the United Broadcasting Company.
All right, it's Juneteenth. So, I didn't know it was Juneteenth on Friday, but it's Juneteenth. Well, it was Juneteenth officially was yesterday, Sunday, June 19th. However, it is federally observed and by most states observed today, which is the 20th of June, 2022. Now, not all states observe Juneteenth. For instance, I'm in Florida, so Florida, Alaska, Arizona, and one other state I'm not thinking of right now. But Florida, let's see, Florida, Alaska, Arizona, and there's one more state. There are four states that don't observe. So here in Florida, although the federally insured banks are closed in Florida, and the United States Postal Service mail delivery is not happening today in the state of Florida. But local government offices are open throughout the state of Florida, 67 counties. So, that's interesting. Let's see. So today's topic, lead off, jump off topic. We can talk about anything you guys want to talk about. Juneteenth and Texas black townships. Something that a lot of people don't realize that Texas, of all states of the Union, had more black townships than any other state. Some people say Oklahoma, but Texas actually dwarfed them now. Some of those black townships might not be not be around today, but I believe Texas had in excess of 500 black townships at any given point in time. Some still exist. It all depends on the purpose of them organizing these black townships, too. Matter of fact, let me see if I can... let me play this while I'm getting information on Texas black townships, because they really led the path when it comes to black townships in the United States. And a lot of it was motivated or triggered by Juneteenth.
Because I used to observe that a lot of little shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you're right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions. Took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that, So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their.
All right. It's Juneteenth, and so the title of today's live stream is Juneteenth, and Texas black townships also have a question of the day. What is the number one, number one method, if that's the right word? Well, let's start off with method. What is the number one way that people have become wealthy in the last 100 years? What's the number one, if you wanted to get wealthy, what would you say is the number one way that people have done it? 619-768-2945. In any event, okay, so let's get to Juneteenth. And, black, of course, you know, we know the history behind that, but here's another part of the history. Freedom colonies, okay, also known as black townships, but more than 550 freedom colonies, and a freedom colony was a township or a settlement, or they called them different things, settlements. If they organized more formally, they were townships, but in any event, there were more than 550 freedom colonies established by almost 200,000 freed African Americans living in Texas alone. Just after the abolition of slavery, Juneteenth. Let's see. There's a map on this online. Let's see. Okay, defining and reclaiming communities. Historical and current census reports do not represent all of the colonies, and for the most part, land that was colonized just after the Civil War by African Americans is missing from the official archival records. Therefore, many of the colonies also are missing from the current day maps that are reproduced by the Texas Department of Transportation and U.S. Geological Survey. One factor that contributes to the contributes significantly to the outcome is that when reporting on land ownership through proper channels at the courthouse became legal for blacks. The efforts were sometimes thwarted through unofficial means such as threats, violence. This person that put this together, Robert, said, squatting without official ownership of their land was safer. You can go down to the courthouse to register your land, but a bunch of men in white hoods might show up on your land that night to run you off your property, Robert said. This happened in this happened to many of my ancestors. And you know what? This ties into the if you look at the work of Ida B. Wells and Walter F. White, Walter Francis White, who looked white but was a black man. The primary cause of a lot of lynchings was it happened to a lot of wealthy black people. So right after slavery, now I'm going from the state of Texas alone, and we're using land as a metric of wealth. All right, Texas had, once again, over, this is in L.A. speaking, but this is documented. Texas had over 500, some call them settlements, and I guess if it wasn't officially organized, but due to safety reasons, I mean, if they were organized and they, you know, went through the channel and paid their whatever fee it was back then and got a municipal charter, they were recognized as official municipalities. But as I just stated, some of these people recorded what they had paid for. They legally had paid for it. These were former slaves. And, you know, then some people with hoods would show up at their property that night or soon thereafter. So some of them, you know, I guess they had their own social network back then. They said, you know what, I done bought the land. I'm not going to officially register the land. We're just going to live quietly on the land. So you had a combination of 550 of those, over 550 of those, right after Juneteenth. Let's see. I'm going to try to get her on here one day. Andrea Roberts, and she's done quite a bit. She's with Texas, at least she was, Texas A&M College of Architecture. And there's a map of this. Matter of fact, look up, if you type in any search engine, Black Townships, Texas, map, Township, Texas map, and then you'll see a map of the black townships and or settlements and those settlements, man, could be anywhere from a few acres to hundreds of acres, in excess of 600, maybe even 1,000 acres of land. So, interesting fact to know. Texas is still a good place to buy land if you know where in the state to go buy. Texas has over 200 counties. Andrea Roberts and Oliver Wayne Sadbury. Hopefully he's still around. I'm going to call them this week, see if I can get one of them on here. But Texas was doing it up. And like I said, you can still go. As long as you avoid, Texas has got over 200 counties. As long as you, in my opinion, as long as you avoid the Houston metro area. Now, this is for buying land. Okay. And I'm talking about at affordable prices. I would avoid the Houston metro area, San Antonio metro area, Dallas-Fort Worth metro area, and Austin, Texas metro area. Avoid those places, and once again, you got over 200 counties in Texas. Texas has got some interesting low prices. All right, well, it's Juneteenth, so I'm going to open up the phone line soon. Oh, and the question today is, what has been, I got to qualify this, prior to 1980, what has been the number one way to get wealthy globally, particularly in Western countries? 619-768-2945 if you think you know the answer to that question.
because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
How'd it go?
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Yo, B.I., man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday, you know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised with you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights, close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear.
The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you gonna do?
I don't know. But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
Man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
All right. That was from the TV series The Wire, which is like 20 years old now. And they were, well, most of the stuff they did during money was illegal. However, there is a tool. This tool or method, whatever you want to call it, where I would say is the, and I'm going from 1980 and back, what was the number one tool that generated wealth globally, particularly in Western countries? Globally. Maybe just not Western countries. If you know that, 619-768-2945. Let's go to Reba here. Good morning, Reba. Now, Reba's here. Her light's on.
Grand Rising, how are you? I do apologize.
Grand Rising. So what's the, well, first thing, can you answer the question, in your opinion, prior from 1980 back 100 years, what would you say would be the number one, if you wanted to get wealthy, what would be the number one way to do it?
Real estate. Legally. Real estate investment, yeah, investment properties, yeah.
That's not it.
Well, I'm looking it up. You know I'm going to do my homework. the other, I would say, is consumable products.
You probably won't even see it. You know what? You probably won't see it in print unless you put together some pieces. But anyway, real estate actually is like not 9%. Of the people who got wealthy did it through real estate. Some people think it's 90%, but it's really just 9%. I didn't know that until this past weekend. But keep on looking. Keep on looking. It's something that everybody knows. It's in plain sight. But unless you know how to put together, I don't want to spill too much of the beans, but anyway, it's. I would even say, if you're dead broke and you need some money, if you use this particular, I'm afraid I got to use my words carefully. If you use this particular method, you can legally go from like zero to 1,000 or more. It's something that is in plain sight, and a lot of people, I haven't seen any books written on it or nothing like that, but it's the number one, and everybody knows about it. Like I said, it's in plain sight. Anyway, so while you're doing your research on that, so what's happening in your neck of the woods, particularly on this
I did just speak with Mama Evelyn. We were at the, and again, just for your listeners, the Mama Evelyn Johnson is the visionary behind Reclaiming Our Youth Day. She lost three of her grandsons, and that's a powerful message, reclaiming our youth. And so she was on as a guest previously, I did tell her that, you know, we'd probably like to, or that you'd probably like to interview her, and then also maybe invite her to Clubhouse.
Oh,
so,
sure would. Definitely.
Yeah, so we were at an event on Saturday. Pardon?
Yeah, I would like to interview. Yeah, I saw part of that live stream, yeah, that you did Saturday.
Okay, okay. I wasn't in my best element, but you see, when I'm with the young folks, I'm pulling the movement, the Black Metropolis movement, and so I was able to get a snippet, and my phone cut off. Nevertheless, so Mama Evelyn was there with her seasoning. Everlasting Joy is her seasoning packet. She also does muffins, infused products as well. Everlasting Joy.
Oh, Everlasting Joy. Two words,
mm-hmm.
One word.
Two words. Mm-hmm. Everlasting Joy. Mm-hmm. So that's her seasoning product. So she has a nice setup. She was set up on Saturday for the Juneteenth celebration with United Black American Progress Association, which we are members of that network organization. And it was founded by Dr. Webb Evans. He's known as Mr. By Black.
I've heard of his name several times. Who is Webb Evans? Heard the name, but you know, I'm not familiar with what he did or does.
Well, he actually had encouraged. I met him through my dad's circle, through National Black United Caucus. Or Chicago Black United Caucus, one of those meetings, when I was going to meetings with my dad to Lou Palmer, you know, who was a longtime host of WVON Talk of the Town. Talking Drum was the slogan. So Dr. Webb Evans was always at those meetings, and these would be Black intellectuals that would come together, you know. Not necessarily politically connected, maybe, because actually at the time, you had, I was like 19, so it was like back in 89 or so, the Black leaders would come together and say, hey, this is who we should vote for. These people are actually doing whatever, doing work in the community. But Dr. Evans had pulled together United Black American Progress Association, and what the organization does is support and educate Black businesses on other Black businesses to support. I come to the table with not only the Spanish, but teaching youth entrepreneurship. So at one point I was heading up the youth committee, and I'm going to, you know, revisit that. So I've taught some of the children Spanish, and I'd like to get into it. I actually submitted a proposal that it kind of got set down, so we just kind of want to bring that back up. I did mention to President of United Black American Progress, Dr. Webb Evans, believes in generational wealth and keeping the money in the Black family. So all of our meetings, we do keep each other abreast on, you know, who's doing what with what monies we're spending. Like, for one, we don't support the Koch brothers, I think they sell fat tissue and things like that, because they fund our prison. So a lot of these companies, they're pulling money from our communities. We're spending our money with them. They're funding prisons, but what about funding programs and opportunities to help better communities? Which, from a businessman standpoint, like Dr. Webb ever said, spend money with your own. So there's a slogan, I don't know it, but it goes something like, the Chinese spend money with their own people. The Asians spend money with their own people. The Mexicans spend their money with their own people. And we should spend money with our own people. So there's a play as well. I'd like to maybe play it, send you an audio, maybe you can share the play. And it's talking about just some history on how his vision came to be. To get Black people to spend, because that's actually how you build, like, the Black Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
That was, he carried on that concept. You know, a lot of people talk it, but he certainly, he and his sister Bernice were instrumental in getting, you know, a network of black businesses to come out. We also do corporate shopping. We had not done anything in a minute, but my aunt just opened up a beauty supply. So corporate shopping, normally we do that. We've done it for, like, restaurants. We take the members, and they set aside maybe a four-hour block of time, whereas the members of United Black American Progress Association would come in and do some business with those black businesses in our community. So I'm going to see if we can head that up again. So I'll mention Minister Raheem Anton, Dr. Webb Evans appointed Minister Raheem Anton, because he was 101 when he transitioned. He lived a long time.
That's a good run.
Yeah. So my youngest son was able to meet him. I don't know how old he was. I think he's like 90. He was 90-something when my son met him. My youngest son who's now 21. So Minister Raheem Anton was appointed as president, and he knew that, okay, well, I want someone to step up. And so he appointed him, maybe not a year later, he did transition, but he had been working with Minister Raheem Anton. A lot of people know him as Sax Preacher. He's a musician. Not Sex Preacher, Sax Preacher. He plays the saxophone. I have to explain to you. I'm saying saxophone, Sax Preacher. So he is so talented with that saxophone that it seems like he really is preacher, so they call him preacher. So we were at this Juneteenth event, the United Black American Progress Association. We hosted a community event and a parade. So the children marched, and then we settled at a place, what was the name of that church? It was off 69th and Morgan here in Chicago. Loomis, was that Morgan or Loomis? Loomis. And so we set up vendor tables, and some people, you know, got some sales. There were some performances. I think, was it, no, DJ Ash is going to be on the 30th, July 30th, at July 30th, not June 30th, at Reclaiming Our Youth. So we got a young DJ who's going to be on, I think it's two of them. So we encourage young people to set up their tables or work with adults for Reclaiming Our Youth Day. Mama Evelyn, matter of fact, I should have sent you her number. She could tell you more. She's known him longer. She's my big sister.
Okay.
I can tell you more about Dr. Webb Evans. But I was doing a job interview, and I mentioned Dr. Evans, and the manager of the hotel, I'm getting ready to start working with Southwood Hotel, she looked him up. She's like, wow, I never knew of him anyway. She had heard the name, like you said. So she Googled his name. She was like, wow. She said she was elated because now the Southwood Hotel was built by a black man. Yeah, here in Chicago, Southwood Hotel. Yeah, so that was pretty intriguing for Regina Hawthorne over at the Southwood Hotel. She looked that up.
Well, Chicago's got quite a few.
I certainly want to educate our young people about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Chicago's got many great entrepreneurs, well, you know, people like Dr. Webb Evans. Are you familiar with, what's his name, Dempsey Travis or Travis Dempsey?
Oh, yeah.
I forgot how, which
yeah,
name. Let me look
certainly.
Him up.
I remember hearing
name
that name growing up. I don't know if that was Travis Realty and Associates or what. I don't know.
Yeah,
I just know.
Yeah, that was him.
Okay, yeah, because I remember just some key people, you know, my family, I had a large family, you know. My grandmother had 11 children, and my grandfather had a couple. There was my Aunt Charlotte. I didn't get to meet her until I was in my teens, I think. So my mother had 10 siblings, and so it was always somebody talking about something positive. And back in the day before sitting and watching Roots, you know, a lot of times people, you know, our people were conscious. And so I would hear these names, Timothy Travis and actually Bob Green. I just realized that I'm actually he was a powerful community leader. And so I just found out that Bob Green is the father of Jerry Green. So I'm helping Jerry Green and his wife to take care of their home. Go out every other Saturday. So I do know that we were taught to talk with our elders, and that's how we, because, I mean, we sat down. Your elders said, hey, come here, I want to talk to you. You know, and sometimes they gather you on the living room floor or somewhere and they say, hey, did you know such, 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 such? So my dad took me around people like Dr. Webb Evans so that I would be aware of who these powerful Black people are and not forget. That's a part of how we can at least know where we come from. It may not be from the same direct blood lineage. However, it's still, we still who we are and we all we got. So let me send Mama Evelyn. She wanted me to send the link. I think I had her on three-way before.
Right.
Yeah, so I thought I'd sent the link, but I suppose not. Let me see.
All you got to do is go to Blog Talk Radio and it.
I just wasn't able. My link wasn't good. My link wasn't good.
So just go back to Blog Talk Radio.
You did send an updated link. You did send an updated link.
Yeah, but if you go to Blog Talk Radio, you can pick which one you want to. You just get it directly.
It didn't work. I've been on there. It didn't work for me. I can try it again now.
Weird.
Let me see. Yeah, just searching did not work. No, it did. But it came up with the older recordings. It did not have, like, I couldn't click on the link, search you and get you live. That was my concern.
Well, they're all on there listed in, not alphabetical order, but by date.
Yeah.
So you should be able to go on it right now and get it.
What? So I should be able to go on right now and get.
Yeah, it's on there.
This particular. Oh, you know what? Okay, so that's this. Yeah, I should be able to go on my other phone. Because I was able to previously. It's not like it's never worked. I'm going to go on my other phone. Higher education, that was last Monday.
Yeah, I forgot. Whatever that
Global,
I forgot.
Gold
what
Egg Asset Builder University.
I forgot which show it was. It was sometime last week. So if
Monday.
You can remember the exact day, then correspond that too, because there's over 2,000 of them.
Okay.
And I can't remember the specific. I can't remember what day she was on.
Okay. Now to your question, I got another guest, and you're right. It's not hard to find something in online about the last 100 years. What was the biggest wealth builder? Maybe I should pose a question like that.
Well, yeah. Pose it like that.
What was the biggest wealth builder over the last 100 years in the United States?
Or global, either one.
Okay.
I haven't seen a book written on it. Not to say there hasn't been. I haven't seen a book written on it. I haven't seen anybody in personal finance write about it. But it's in plain sight. Everybody knows about it.
Public speaking?
You're close. But that's
you said 100 years.
Since 1980 and back. And it's still one of the biggest ones.
1980.
It might not be number one anymore. But from 1980
back. I would say entertainment,
back,
right?
You're warm, but that's
speaking,
not it.
Okay. Was I warmer when I said public speaking? Warmer?
Well, that was good. You're warm with that answer and the last one you just said. But no, but. Keep on guessing.
Let me Okay. Well, it did say real estate has created 90% of the world's millionaires.
Yeah, that figure's wrong. It's more like 9%.
Okay, yeah.
But that's the first answer that most people give.
Yeah, and I gave it. Let's see. Well, so public speaking, preachers, nah.
Well,
they get
money. Good. That's good. Let me see. Let me throw out a little clue. Common denominator between Adolf Hitler and the Jackson 5 and let me see, Adolf Hitler, the Jackson 5, and let's start with those two. What's the common denominator between those two?
Followers? They had a lot of followers. I mean, that's one common
denominator. Well, yeah.
The common denominator? Adolf Hitler. And the Jackson 5. That's interesting. Nobody would think that they had anything in common.
There's a common denominator between those two.
Adolf Hitler and Jackson 5.
Let me throw in another clue. The common denominator between Adolf Hitler, the Jackson 5, and Eva Perón.
I heard
for those
name.
Of you who know who Eva Perón, you know who Eva Perón was?
Yeah.
Eva Perón lived in Argentina, and she was married to
Eva.
Juan Perón, who was the president of Argentina. And they've made movies about her and songs about her, and she is very popular in Argentina, and she came up poor. All right, so you got three clues in the form of people.
Eva Perón or Eva Perón?
Eva Perón, EVA, not Ava. I'm glad you point out that distinction. She was the second wife of Argentine. I think it was a dictator. No. I think it was Juan Perón.
She became an actress. I'm reading.
She at one time was an actress. I'm going to take another. While you're working on that, and if anybody thinks they know, and the question is, what has been, now we're stopping at 1980. What has been, what was the number one wealth builder globally from 1980 going back 100 years? It's still around today. Plain sight, everybody around the world has heard about it, and no, it's not real estate. And now Eva Perón, I'm afraid to tell you too much about. You know what? I'll let people read about Eva Perón on her own, on your own. There's a lot of information about her. And with that common denominator, You know what? I'm afraid because I say anymore. Read about you might you'll probably guess it if you read her biography. But anyway, anyway, it's Juneteenth, and Texas black townships. We talked about that. Texas had over 550 black townships and/or settlements that was formed right after after they found out about slavery. Okay, because they were the last ones to, I think the state of Texas, the black folk there didn't find out about it until late, thus the date, Juneteenth, which it is not recognized in the state of Florida, Arizona, and Alaska. And it's one other state. That slips my mind at the moment. But it's online. Okay, let's go to 314 while Reba's working on that. 314, your mic is open.
What's going on, L.A.?
Oh, I thought it was going to be a totally relaxing holiday today, but I'm in Florida, so Florida, other than the federally insured banks and the United States Post Office, everything is business as usual here in Florida.
Oh, absolutely, it should be. People got to make money.
I think Missouri is the fourth state. I think Missouri is the fourth state.
Well, is people supposed to take off for every nook and crook celebration? Got work to do. It's bad enough you got these Democrats in there that's killing all these opportunities and industries. People filling up their tank, paying over $100. It's ridiculous.
That's true. I talked to a friend of mine yesterday, and he was at the gas pump.
I bet he voted for Biden, didn't he?
I don't know. I don't know his politics at all, but I think he put like $103 in there.
Well, that's like when you know, people do their own, but you can't support ideologies like that that's going to hurt you. Heck, I cut friends off because they had such a disdain for the policies of the last president.
Politics does that. This COVID thing has been politicized, and I probably lost at least one friend behind that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not supporting no business that turn around. Yeah, let me give you an example. Walmart has stopped carrying Mr. Pillow's pillows because of his stance on the election. Or should they do that? The man's got that's his opinion. So now, since I was a customer of Mr. Pillow, should I stop doing business with Walmart? Think.
Well, I don't follow politics that close, but via politics, that can split people up. People take politics more personal than religion.
Well, you have to, because why would you invest in somebody who's going to turn around and invest in somebody else who enact legislation that cripples your ability to do business and make money? It doesn't make sense.
Well, that's true. I mean, because I'm for dramatically less government. Where some people want more government.
Yeah, and some people want more social programs.
And social programs are expensive.
Yeah, absolutely.
But somebody's got to pay for them. I don't want to be one of them.
So if you build one of these black townships, who's going to occupy them and at what level?
The black ship, let's just go with the ones because we're talking about Texas today. Those black townships were built by former slaves who were overwhelmingly Republican. So that the blacks back then, on a critical mass basis, because I agree with you, not all blacks are alike. But back then, the majority of black people, at least the ones that in Texas and Oklahoma and some other places, they were Republicans. They were self-reliant, and they wanted less government, and they wanted opportunities to thus they built those townships and settlements. Now,
yeah, and that was
in
all
2022,
kind of mm-hmm.
it's a different thing. Now, what? But the blacks back then who were formerly slaves, they had, in my opinion, more like basic fundamental life skill sets than the typical black today.
Well, it depends on what you call life skill sets. You know, slaves themselves.
Well, here's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the bare bones basics. They knew how to build their own homes. There were no mortgages. There were no government programs during that era. So they had to. They knew how to catch and or grow their own food, harvest their own water. I'm calling that the Maslow hierarchy needs those basic life skills. All right.
Yeah, that's a good
now,
point. I have to agree with you on that.
Most of them did not have a formal education, or if they did, it might have gone to fifth or sixth grade. But they were able to live then in those areas a sustainable lifestyle. Now, if they're in, let's say you have those same life skills today, and you're in Houston, Texas, New York City, Chicago, St. Louis, they'll probably need additional skills to live a sustainable lifestyle in those towns in 2022.
Well, if those type of life skills existed today, it wouldn't be no United States, because it would have went under during World War II and probably even before, because this country would have been taken over at that time by Japan. But, you know, business opportunity, even slaves, you know what slaves own, don't you?
Well, some were ranchers and oil barons. Ones I've been studying from a historical point of view.
What else do they own?
Farms.
What else do slaves own? Slaves owned other slaves.
True. You did have slaves that owned other slaves.
Yeah,
but now we need to make a distinction here. Some of those slaves were family members.
Well, some of them may have been family members, but a lot of them wasn't family members.
And there were over 4,000 black folk that did own slaves here, right here in the United States.
Yeah, and where did they get the money from that? I thought that they didn't get paid.
Well, they got paid.
All right. So there's a lot of lies.
Frank McWhorter, people can look him up. He got paid. He bought his freedom. Mother Priscilla Baltimore, born a slave. She worked, got paid as a slave. She bought her freedom. So there are a lot more people like that that a lot of people just don't talk about.
Yeah, and they talk about so-called people based on skin color, which I think is totally ridiculous. Bo, I heard somebody post something about Massamosa. You heard about him.
Yeah, I've heard about him. They say he's arguably the wealthiest man who's ever lived thus far.
Yes. And what was one of his biggest commodities?
Slaves.
Slaves. Black slaves. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, black African slaves. That was... you don't amass nothing that large without affordable labor, also known as slavery.
And people put his posters up on the wall, but want to take down other people's posters off the wall, like Robert E. Lee and so on. I don't understand it. That's hypocrisy.
Well,
really
a lot of people that mentioned Massamosa in the terms of the wealth, most of, at least in the conversations I've had with people that bring his name up, not talking about you, but most people who bring it up don't even, you know what, I don't even think they realize that he had slaves.
No, they don't. They probably think he came from Arkansas, too.
Well,
many of them. Another lady that they cherish is Nzinga of Angola. She had slaves, mm-hmm. too. She enslaved all people.
Practically any,
so it
any
was a going thing. It was
historical
a going thing.
Figure coming out of the continent of Africa was a slave owner.
And it still goes on today.
Well, that's true. You can go to South Sudan.
I'm going to show
you
some. You
can buy a slave in South Sudan today.
Yeah, I'm going to send you a video of a street food scenario in Ghana. And you see what girls that are slaves that are working. And then they go to school. But they are considered mm-hmm. a slave because the word has been improperly termed and applied. Because these girls are working.
You know what? That's a very good point that you brought up. A lot of times when the word slave is used, a lot of people don't know the historical and legal concept of that word. And in modern day lingo, particularly here in the United States, they've just butchered it.
Absolutely. And these
because
young girls,
if you go talk to those people that are slaves, that we're calling slaves, if you talk to them personally, they're not. They don't identify that way.
Well, I ain't never talked to one, but I've seen them. Like over there where you have one tribal group, one language group called a Ga. You know you can tell the girls in school age because they wear their hair short. But they're working in these kitchens and these food preparations, and they consider it a slave. Just because, like I told you before, the word has been used in a roundabout fashion here in the United States. But although some people in the United States use it because they say that when they go on a job, they're a slave. Basically, you could say that because they're working for somebody else. If you want to stretch definitions out there for.
Yeah, that word really has been misused.
So, you know, as far as the townships, those things are gone in the history. They ain't coming back. If they didn't survive then.
You got about 900 that are still out there, Bianchi.
Yeah, but what are
they
doing?
I mean, they're little places.
What's their population, about 25, 30 people?
Some are. Taft just got maybe about 350 people. Summit has, I guess, 100 or so. Tallahassee, and these are towns I've been to, has probably about 100. Highland Beach, Maryland, 50,
yeah.
51.
Yeah, just town
Mount Bayou,
town
where
people.
Mount Pleasant's wife is from, that probably has probably a little bit over 1,000.
Yeah, it's just people, a gathering of people. There's nothing really big going on. No industry is going to move there, right? Ford ain't going to build no plant there. Ain't no tech company going to build no tech company
in
there.
In Taft, Oklahoma, and I've been there a number of times, Taft, Oklahoma, they do
have the biggest
industry
is
prison. Number one source of revenue for the town of Taft,
mm-hmm.
Oklahoma, is two prisons.
Right.
A male prison and a female prison. That's the number one industry in Taft. Number two, they have 5 black churches. And number three, they have one. The last time I was there, they didn't have the first few times I went to Tab. It's a couple of black ladies, and they own a, I would call it a snack shop. You know, you can come there and buy, you know, Hershey bars.
Well, yeah, that's
greasy,
a hobby.
Potato chips.
How many people in the town?
But that's it.
How many people in the town?
They live in a population of about 350.
350. So that means that they got How many people, how many churches they say? They got five?
Five. And a lot of those church members do not live in Taft.
Oh,
they might come, they might drive from as far away from Tulsa. That's about a 45-minute drive. And, they, you know, they'll come to Taft. And...
Well, I was going to say each church probably got 70 people, but it might be down to 35.
Yeah, but not a lot of those people that attend church in Taft live in Taft.
Right. Then if they contribute $20, that's a lot to come from that segment of the population.
Yeah, but what's keeping Taft, Oklahoma alive will be those two prisons.
Yeah,
that's
quite
what's
naturally. That's what pays people's salary. And if you had any of them settlements today, it would be the same thing. You don't have enough going on for people to make a living. That's why people.
Now,
that's why blacks left the South and went north.
Way back before any of us was born, they had two hotels in Taft. They had a newspaper in Taft. Then it was basically an agricultural place, like most townships. Most black townships relied on agriculture. But now it's now you got fast food, you got big farms, and a lot of people just moved to the city due to the comfort and conveniences to the city. Taft is about 15 to 20 minutes away from Muskogee, so whatever you can't get in Taft, and there's a whole lot you cannot get in Taft, but you can take a 15 to 20 minute drive, and then you'll get to Walmart, T-Mobile. Anything that you get in the city, Muskogee is what... I forgot how large.
But let me ask you a question.
Got everything you need.
Let me ask you a question. Now, you say that these black settlements was in these states. Was any in Illinois, Missouri?
I've named those before, Bianca. You heard. The first one was, they no longer exist, though. New Philadelphia, mm-hmm. That was founded by former slave Frank McWhorter. But that's a historical
market. Yeah, but was it any in Missouri?
The two I know about, mm-hmm. and you know about them too, Brooklyn, Illinois, which is not too far from St. Louis, but it's in Illinois. I understand it's a bunch of bars and strip bars there now, but that's still around. And then Hobson.
But they
were
around the big cities. They was around the big cities, like close to St. Louis, Chicago, Brooklyn, right across the river from St. Louis, mm-hmm. Oklahoma City, Albuquerque. Yeah, there wasn't none out in New Mexico.
Right. And then Hopkins
and
Park
wasn't none out in Arizona. Arizona.
Right.
Well, I was getting there, I hear people talk about how these interstate highways, when they came through, they cut off and killed black cities. But that's just not necessarily true.
No, I didn't see that in my research.
No.
I've heard that too.
Because
in the towns that I researched, you know, that a lot of those towns are still rural. Like Park, Illinois, not 3 years ago, me, Pleasant, and Reba went down there. And it was my first time because they live in Illinois. But it
was
basically, all I saw was farms. That was it.
You take Route 66, come out of Chicago, through Illinois to St. Louis, through Missouri, to Oklahoma, through the northern edge of Texas, through the two-thirds edge, top edge of Albuquerque, New Mexico, Arizona,
mm-hmm.
going on into California to Los Angeles. Then that was the old Route 66. Then they put a interstate highway which parallels that. Well, that interstate highway went through what were white towns also, and put them off the map. I mean, it's not cutting them off because you had Route 66 that's still there today. I know people who have traveled that from Los Angeles all the way to Chicago, and I know where it goes through St. Louis. So that there's another one of them myths that people have said, and they get away with that.
Well, a lot of people don't fact check, and what's that Stevie Wonder song, Superstition?
Mm-hmm. But, you know, today there are so many opportunities, especially when you start looking into the future of things to come and travel for instance, and the mode of travel that's going to be with these drone type vehicles, and all the supporting industries that would go along with it. I don't see people having no giant houses anymore, because family sizes have gotten so small. I think people are going to have smaller homes, more compact, and that would actually be the way to go.
Yeah, you're right. We're in the age of the Jetsons. You're right. There was a cartoon way back called Supercar. And, of course, the Jetsons cartoons. And now you have these drones out here. YouTube's got all this stuff. But you're right. You got people with jetpacks. So that's what's coming through right now.
Now, if you was coming up today, Ty, what would the aviation industry pursuits would you choose? What do you think?
You got to look at drones. Now, does drones come under STEM? Yeah, because
it comes under aviation, yes.
Yeah.
Aviation is big in STEMs. It takes STEM degrees, STEM knowledge, should I say, in order to be be efficient at it. But, you know, I like what Elon Musk is doing. I really do. You know what
he's
can
doing
have
a lot, so specifically what?
Oh, look at how he does with those rockets. Those rockets come back after they lift their payload up.
Well, hold on, that's Jeff Bezos, isn't it? Jeff Bezos.
Musk is doing it. Musk is doing it also.
Because I watched about two of his launches.
SpaceX.
And the payload returns right back down to the launch pad.
Well, yeah, Musk does that also.
Well, he does that already. I haven't seen him. I've seen Bezos.
With Amazon, right?
Yeah, Bezos with Amazon.
That's where he gets his biggest.
His payload comes back down to Earth, and Sir Richard Branson with Virgin, he has a different model altogether. It's like he's getting his and fly.
Right. So, yeah, then also these other opportunities that's there with removing space junk that's in the orbital distance above the Earth and above the atmosphere.
Yeah, removing space junk, I believe there will be people will be
that's
spending.
That's a big business.
I think within the next 20 years, they'll have people that will be spending the weekends or the week or whatever space economy. Imagine a Hilton or the Hyatt or whatever. You know, you just go up to space for a luxury weekend or week or whatever time you can book. I think that's I think that's in the works.
You think blacks will settle on the Mars?
Repeat that now.
You think blacks would be? You think there'd be a lot of blacks that would be gravitating
toward
Mars?
I don't know about a lot of blacks. I don't know of a lot of blacks, but there will be. There's some black children right now, 8, 9, 10 years old, that's reading Popular Mechanics magazine and on some type of website that I don't even know about, that's probably building little rockets right now. I believe those kids will be up in space.
Now, you know it won't be no law and order. No constitution applies to Mars, so I hope everybody behaves.
True. You're absolutely right. But I think, but you're talking about anybody within the sound of my voice, our voices, if we have the money, we can, Bezos is a Blue Origin or whatever he calls this program, or Sir Richard Branson, if we got the millions of dollars, we can book a flight. Anybody right now, they're open for business right now. So,
yeah, it's people with extraordinary money, though.
You're right. Those are people with extraordinary money, and that's a small population of people. Now, but I see, and I mention this from people from time to time. I'm going to repeat it again. I'm telling people, whatever you earn in a year, you need to start figuring out strategies on how you can make that money in a month, a consistent monthly basis, or even a consistent weekly basis, because with inflation, those we're headed there now. I'll give you a good example. In 1975, 1976, I'm in high school, all right, $25,000 in 1975, 1976, you basically live a decent middle-class lifestyle in a safe neighborhood, all right? That breaks down to about $500 a week. In 2022, all right, you need to be thinking about taking in about $2,000 to $2,500 a week to equal the same standard of living of 1975, 1976. The late Kevin's, and that comes out to what Kevin Samuels was talking about right before he passed away. He said the high-valued man needs to be earning, now this is entry level, according to Kevin Samuels, $10,000 a month. But that coincides with, now he didn't bring out the stats like I did based on inflation, $2,000 to $2,500 a week. And but if you bring it back, if you factor in inflation, going back to the mid-70s, that's $500 a week. That's something that my parents, they were taking in. My stepfather was an educator and a plumber, but he was taking in about $25,000 a year. My mother dwarfed him in income because she gave anesthesia. She was an RN, but her specialty was anesthesia, plus she worked. Today we call her a nurse entrepreneur. She probably did about $100,000 a year in 1975, 1976.
Yeah, anesthesiologists.
And they wouldn't be. They were middle class. They were middle class.
Yeah.
They were not.
Well,
I would not consider them rich. They were middle class.
Yeah, why don't you get back to your other call before they run out of time? Pleasant conversation.
Okay, thank you, Pianchi. The question of the day, and this is Juneteenth, but this is kind of open air right now. If anybody knows, well, from 1980, we're going from 1980 back 100 years, what would be the number one way a person that can get wealth? And here's another thing. Doing anything. Legally, doing anything legally, and no, it's not real estate. Let me knock that out. Real estate really is, a lot of people say that, people that get, if you took all the people who got wealthy, only 9% made it in real estate. Just 9%. Out of 100%. Reba, you got any luck? And the clues I gave, Adolf Hitler, the Jackson Five, and the third clue would be
Eva,
that's EVA, Perón.
Eva Perón. And I didn't realize that movie that I was watching when I was little was Evita. I didn't know it was about her.
Evita, the movie was about, and Faye Dunaway portrayed Madonna's down here too and something else, but the movie I think you're talking about was what's the name? I just say the name, forgot it that quick. Faye Dunaway.
Mm-hmm.
Faye Dunaway portrayed Eva Perón. But Eva Perón. What is the common denominator? If you figure out the common denominator with those three, and I've never seen a book on personal finance written on it, not to say that it hasn't been, but I've never seen one, and I've read my share of personal finance books. I've never seen a guru do an infomercial on it or talk about it. Everybody, including little kids, know about it.
Wow. And that movie inspired me, too. Wow, because I'm a singer myself.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Oh, gosh. I said public speaking.
That's a good clue.
So they have access to people, just people. Okay, hold on.
You're hot.
You can tell I got a billionaire's mindset, and a billionaire PA just sent me, he's sending me this energy necklace that he wore for 19 hours. I'll tell you more about him. As a matter of fact, would love to have him on the show. But he's
a
motivational. Yeah, I actually met him on Clubhouse.
You're hot.
Energy.
You're very hot. So, see, I'm afraid to give clues.
Word of mouth.
Well,
singing. Hitler didn't sing. Ibiza
you're very warm.
Sang.
You're very warm.
Wow. Oh, goodness.
Let me give you two more clues. Oh, you know what? Hold it. Wait a minute. One of them I shouldn't give. But I'll give one out of the two. But that might be giving it away. But oh, man. No, if I give either one of those. All right, I'm going to give them. John H. Johnson, the late John H. Johnson, Arkansas, but of course he moved to Chicago and had Ebony and Jet. The first two black people that made the Forbes 400, John H. Johnson and Berry Gordy, all right, so the common denominators between, I just really gave it away with them. John H. Johnson. Oh, you know what? Forget about John H. Johnson. Oh, damn, I already mentioned his name. I should have said George Johnson. George Johnson, also Chicago. I think he's still living. His company, the creator of the Afro Sheen Blowout Kit. So George Johnson, John H. Johnson, Berry Gordy, Eva Perón, of dictator Juan Perón, the Jackson 5, and Adolf Hitler. All those people have a common denominator. That helped make, all right, that helped either make them rich or powerful.
One thing in common, rich or powerful. You see, right in plain sight.
Free speech.
I mean.
Show me anybody who can speak. They can be 3-4 years old. They would know.
You know what I'm saying? Freedom of speech.
No, they would be aware. They might not know the answer, but they would be aware because it's in plain sight.
To be able to speak English.
Well, now here's the thing. It can be, if we're going to put language in there, there are millions of people that are aware of this and have used it several times in their life. This common denominator.
Huh.
So it's in every language.
Their tongue.
What?
Their tongue, their mouth, Their mouth,
No. You're warm, but.
See, I told my other son.
Oh, let me give you another clue. You know, the probably reason why you haven't guessed the answer so far is because you're probably too close to it.
Right. When you started saying, I said, that must be what it is. Plain sight. Not the telephone, the teleways. I would say the radio airways. Media.
You got it.
Oh, I was going to say that at first. What?
The number one way. Now, let's connect the dots. And we went from 1980 and back. All right, back 100 years. The number one way that people have gotten rich and or powerful is through the use of radio. Franklin Delano Roosevelt with his fireside chats when there was no TV. Eva Perón gave speeches via, and she was born dirt poor.
So I've got
she
it.
Became
I got
a,
it.
She became an actress, but most of, but acting in her day, when there was no TV at first, acting
right.
was done through radio.
And I actually started listening recently to some of those, like, they're like episodes, and I realized I was telling my friend who watches them, his he's a veteran, Bernard Freeman. He said, I said they were those white folks were pretty witty. Like, oh, and you think this is da da da, you know? They were witty. So it's just audio, you know. It's just like radio shows that you call them.
Eva Perón, and like I said, she went from dirt poor. She became an actress. The actress, they were doing those when it was no TV.
All right.
And then when she hooked up with Juan Perón, a lot of her speeches, and now you can see the visual on them now, but they were broadcast through radio.
Okay.
Because that was the main means of communication for families and individuals globally before there was TV. All right.
Which is back to TV, what Dr.
Carter, TV in the United States, really commercial TV in the United States, didn't even start until about 1938. All right. With the Jackson 5, okay, essentially it was, now they had two things working for them, radio and TV by the time they came along. But they got more mileage out of radio. Hitler, here's a guy who was born with practically no resources. He wrote a book, and then he learned how to use radio, and through his speeches, here's a guy that went from nothing to the head of a country. Radio was his primary leverage tool. But you can connect the dots with radio on that. That's the common denominator that has made a lot of people wealthy. Now, and if you look at the three impact technologies in the last 150 years, the telephone, the radio, and the computer. Those are three tools that, matter of fact, Jeff Bezos. Amazon's basically a media company. Motel Records, basically a media company. Jet Magazine, Ebony Magazine, Negro Digest, all under Johnny Johnson, media company. Motown, media company.
Okay.
So that's it. I pulled it out of you, but you got it.
And I was gonna say,
and if you look at people like Jay-Z, now think about Jay-Z,
like you said, it was
first generation billionaire. Master P knocking at the door of his grandfather died and left him with $10,000. He opened up a record store. Master P, No Limit Records is a media company.
Yeah.
Death Row Records, media company. The common denominator with all of John F. Kennedy, media. FDR, the radio, with those fireside chats. The TV didn't come along commercially until 1938.
Wow.
So in 2022, you know, if you, well, now we got the computer, which, you know, now we can do audio and visual.
Yeah.
But I don't know about you, but I've never, you know what, I didn't get this until I was listening to something like early Saturday morning, and something popped in my head, And I got a degree in mass communication and electronic media. But I didn't connect the dots until I listened to somebody else. He was talking about something totally different. And he was giving the history of wealth or whatever. And this radio popped in my mind, and someone told me, you know what, let me look up, you know, get these dates. When was radio out there? When was, you know, television was out there? And then one of my favorite movie series of all time, Blondie, starring Penny Sunkin and Dag, or not, that was his TV name, Arthur Lake playing Dagwood Bumstead. I was thinking about, wait a minute now, this was, the first one was done in 1938. And in there, when the phone rings, you see one of these old telephones you'll see in a museum now. But they had modern conveniences in their home, but the one thing that they didn't have was a TV. But they had a radio, though. And out of your town, WVON.
Yeah, the
top of the town. I think Don Cornelius passed through there.
Mm-hmm.
And now by that time TV was around, but I think he was doing, you know, because the original Soul Train came out of Chicago, as you know.
Yeah.
But WVON, which I know you've had some activity with them, so like I say, you are real close to the answer, and a lot of times when you're real close to the answer, you overlook it. It happened with me.
Yeah, because we are in media.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's so close to me. It's like second nature. So I agree, because
right.
I was going to say that. I was going to say media.
Well, you were hot several times when you said, you were hot. You were very warm several times.
Wow.
But that's why I threw in those examples of Adolph Hitler, Jackson 5, Eva Peron, because, you know, wait a minute. Three totally different personalities.
Yes.
Okay. But they all use radio and had a, because if you think about it with the Jackson 5, okay, when their records came out, ABC and all that, I Want You Back and all that, basically radio provided free advertising if you had a record out.
Yeah.
You know, now, and that's the way it was structured. Now, if me and you wanted to go on WVON to pitch something, we had to pay for it. But
okay, yeah.
You take the Jackson 5 or the Beatles or any of those popular groups then, and you put it out on the radio, and the program director picks it, man, it's like free advertising for that record. So they were on hundreds, if not thousands, of stations and getting exposure. And the record companies back then were the gatekeepers. But now, anybody can set up a record company. We have the technology where you can set up your own record company, produce your own Hollywood quality movies, and through the internet, you use them as a distribution system. We'll go into later this week. We'll go into the, you know, how that works, on how to use media. Yeah, how to use media to increase your income. But I mean, Snoop Dogg. I mean, think about
wealth, right.
Snoop Dogg.
Possibly gain wealth.
Huh? Yeah, Snoop Dogg.
Or the possibly
gain
wealth. But yeah.
Right. Yeah, but if you look, think about it. Snoop Dogg, I'm going to name some rappers. Snoop Dogg, Ice-T, we're talking about dudes that did, and women, that started out with nothing. Some had criminal records. But they made a product, and that product was primarily marketed through radio, not TV.
Radio.
I mean, they got videos out now. But and the people I'm using, once again, Ice-T, because he goes back in the day a little bit. You know, the whole NWA, Death Row crew, Tupac, basically radio. And people heard it on the radio, because I hardly listen to radio these days. you know, AM and FM, because I'm an online guy. But now people use YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Apple Music has got a, you know, a division.
I got one even
Google's
better
got something,
for you.
So there are other platforms now where, you know, that's the technology of the day, but it's coming through. And then even the Breakfast Club, which is a radio show out of New York, but they televise their show via YouTube, and then you can watch a lot of their episodes. They're in a radio studio, and they broadcast through radio, but they're keeping up with the times by putting it up
on YouTube. Yeah.
YouTube, yeah.
Even better.
Matter of fact, when you're out and about, you're doing the same thing. You know, when I saw you online Saturday, I mean, you've been online several times.
Media.
You know, doing. Yeah, doing. Right, you're.
My last room.
What I would call you? All right, there was a show called Pump It Up some years ago, headed up by Dee Barnes. They called her Sister D. They probably got some episodes on YouTube. She was probably the world's, if she wasn't the first, she was one of the first, hip-hop journalist.
Okay, sounds familiar.
So, that, what was that event, the event that you went to, Sadie, what would you call it?
Well, I'm calling it the Black Youth Metropolis Movement. So that was a, it was a community event.
We can call you a community journalist or a black community journalist, because you got to do is monitor.
I'm from the Latino community too, so yeah. Community journalist.
So all you
got to
do is monetize that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to engage
my youngest son, who's playing a video game as we speak. And I notice, like, sometimes I listen to video games, and guess what's playing in the background? Music.
Right.
So it's not just, like, the different tones and stuff, but now they have, like, CJ, what's one of the rappers that had something on one of the, like, the basketball game I heard, and was like, well, who is that? I was like, I like that. And it was a popular artist whose music was playing.
Well, there's a whole bunch of them. Like I said, that's why I stopped at 1980.
The video games have, because that's,
right.
People are going to use a computer.
What year did you graduate high school?
88.
Right, 88. Okay. Think about it. The people that you were listening to, you heard a lot more of them. You heard them daily on radio. And then every now and then you might, like, think about it. 88 Soul Train was still on with Don Cornelius, I believe. Okay. So in 88, we heard our favorite records on radio, be it in our bedroom, the kitchen, or at school, something like that. And then on Saturdays with Soul Train, that would be the one day of the week that we get to see him on TV. So, anyway. But, yeah, telephone, television, computer, and before that, you had the newspaper. We can't discount the newspaper. And before that, we had theaters, because the community, the theater, people that went to see a play. Matter of fact, what's his name? Tyler Perry. You know, his plays were basically on the Chitlin Circuit, which now they call the Urban Theater Market. But a lot of his plays, before they became film, well, you would hear, like, Mama the Grits Are Hot, something like that. But you would hear that on a black radio station. But here's the thing. There are over 15,000 radio stations in the United States. I think there are, like, 168 black radio stations. So that exists now. So A lot of people take it for granted, but well, you're doing the right thing. You're in media. On that note, I'm going to wrap it up for today, Breve, on this edition of Juneteenth. And you know what we're going to do the next Clubhouse?
So we can certainly set one up for tonight, 6 o'clock same time, 7 o'clock Florida time. And I certainly want to bring, I just heard from Billionaire PA, we bring him into the conversation. He is actually taking advantage of the resource that we are just speaking of, because I met him once again on Clubhouse. He sent a video. He does videos daily, or two or three. Like you said, doing multiple videos. It does make a difference. And so he came up from homelessness, and he has a powerful, powerful story to share. So I certainly want to get him in. So we're sharing on our Clubhouse. So the Clubhouse title, the app is called Clubhouse, but our Clubhouse title for our platform is Couples Building Wealth. And tonight, I don't know, how do we get the word out?
Well, with Clubhouse, you know.
Get the word out.
Well, Clubhouse got a big audience anyway. So just set it up. And then, you know, once it's set up, I can ping people out on my network, and then you can ping them out on your network. And then on Clubhouse, they call it the hallway, people that are looking for whatever particular conversation on whatever topic.
Yeah.
And you, that's why we got 100 the first time we did it.
Yeah. Pinging others into the room and certainly connecting with others.
Right.
Following people that come into your room. So, and then, you know, there are people that actually are on there, just like they have people that tell you how to build your YouTube audience and how to become monetized. They are considering a way to monetize this Clubhouse thing, too. Nevertheless, so a title for tonight,
The way I look at Clubhouse is, you can set up your own radio station on there. For right now, Clubhouse is free. Number two is unregulated. And you can be, like, with Blog Talk, you know, the most I can get out of Blog Talk is maybe 2 hours and 50 minutes a day. If I go past 2 hours, they might drop me. Like, we're past 2 hours now. But typically, they give you 50 minutes overtime. All right? Now, with Clubhouse, there are no restrictions like that. And plus, with Blog Talk, you got to pay. All right? But now with Clubhouse, you don't have to pay. There's probably more people on Clubhouse. And you can, if you want to talk 24 hours, you can talk 24 hours for right now on Clubhouse. So what I would like to do, particularly with your channel, is, okay, let's get a team together. You do 1 hour. I do 1 hour. Just if we got 24 people to do just 1 hour a day, we got a 24-hour station right there on Blog, because the cell phone, the smartphone, is the new transistor radio. Particularly if we can localize it. You know, if we can localize Reba Radio, Chicago, if we can localize it, then, you know, and that was the beauty of radio, and, you know, we'll probably talk about this tomorrow. Local radio, which, like, where I'm at in Florida, the three black radio stations that we hear, they're gone. They're out of business. Why? Because generally speaking, a lot of radio stations across the country stopped serving the local market.
Yeah.
They just started dealing with national advertisers like McDonald's, Coca-Cola, something like that. But no, give me, like in D.C., Chili Bowl. Give me a local. Support that local business. You know, what are the community announcements? Now, that's the thing I can say about WVON out of Chicago. WVON is still in the Chicagoland community. Here, it sounds good that we got listeners that live in Russia, but we're not going to have any person from Russia come patronize our local business.
Right.
You know, so Doggone it.
You got to consider your purpose. Go global, and then what's the purpose? Global.
Yeah,
see,
I want to get now. It's great. I'm able to meet. I read. You know, Pianki's in St. Louis, Beasley's in North Carolina. You know, somebody's in the Philly. All that's great, but to really, from our point of view, all right.
The
way I like to have boots on. When you get to meet people, boots on the ground, face to face, then you can really develop some traction to generate revenue. Although there are people that, you know, do fine online, and but I'm not set up that way. So on that note, I'm gonna end it for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Everybody have a good Juneteenth.